30 days has September, April, June, and November. That's how I remember this. So sometimes I got to do this on my hands, yeah. Elizabeth and Dan. But February has 28. In leap year, 29. Mm-hmm. So guess what tomorrow is?
That's where the whole thing falls apart.
That's where the whole thing goes to shit. So tomorrow's the 29th. So today is not the last day of February. Today is the 28th of February. It's Market Call. It's Dan Nathan. It's Elizabeth Young. That's, of course, EY from SoFi. And G Swizzle here. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great.
We have things to talk about. Elizabeth, how are you?
I'm great. Isn't there also a month thing where you can, like, you line up your knuckles and that's how you know the days, like the big knuckles or the third?
You just did it to show your ring off.
Show the little hardware.
I know.
It's a little hardware. I mean, a little hardware.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the beaches.
I don't know that trick. Somebody watching knows that trick.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll put it in the chat. First person that answers correctly, we'll send them a book. We'll send them.
Kara's book.
Let's do a little housekeeping.
So this is a little risk reversal media stuff. So Kai and I interviewed Kara Swisher. She's the author of the Burn book. It's just Burn book, actually. It's not like the
Eagles. It's Burn book.
Yeah. And she is the host of the Sway podcast, the On podcast with Kara Swisher. The first 100 people go to the podcast store at Apple and rate OK Computer.
Yeah, sure.
Just rate it. Subscribe, rate it. We're going to send you a free book. So do that. Contact at riskreversal.com with a screenshot. Amanda's going to send you a book.
Send Amanda a screenshot. What do they call when you blow up somebody's inbox?
Right. Okay, computer.
You're blowing up their inbox.
You'll give me a free book?
Free burn book.
I got my book signed last night.
I did too. Did you read it?
Of course I read it.
What did she say?
Do you really want to know?
Yes.
Or should I keep it between me and Kara?
I would like to hear it.
It said, hunka hunka burning love, Kara.
You know what she said to me?
No idea.
She said, keep it hot. Burn, baby, burn.
Okay.
Love, Kara.
Okay. I like mine better.
The best. So she was on Fast Money with us last night.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And she did our podcast.
That would be CNBC
the other day.
One.
All right, guy, what do we have to talk
about?
Let's go
to the rundown. I mean, because that's what we do. Watch this. It's going to be right behind me here. You're going to check this out.
Whoa.
Biotech. Now, there's a reason why we started with this. Because if you, for you Fast Money fans out there, you will notice within the first 8 or so minutes of the show, now, I curse like a truck driver. I don't know what that means. Apparently, they curse. But having done CNBC's Fast Money for 17 years, I'm proud to say it has not happened yet. Yeah. It's just inevitable. It's a matter of time. However, if you were watching last night, you heard Dan say something about to the effect that biotech or something is going batshit. You said batshit, and then you sort of caught yourself.
I felt really bad about it.
Oh, you didn't.
I did.
So biotech has gone batshit crazy. We have a little bat there. That's a nice job. I don't know if you can see the bat behind me, but trust me, there it is. There's the bat.
Oh, wow. There you go.
We're going to do an S&P sector check, because why not? We're going to do a Salesforce earnings preview. That comes out CRM. And of course, if it's Wednesday, it's Elizabeth, it's audience Q&A. So let's start this show off, Dan.
Well, let's do this. Okay, so Liz, you know, we actually, and again, we appreciate our fine staff on the CNBC's Fast Money. They try to find like an interesting thing that has not been talked about all day long on the network. And it's kind of interesting. I know Guy and many of the panelists on the show have been really bullish on, you know, individual themes within biotech. Actually, the valuation in some of these names, the attractiveness from an M&A standpoint, let's just pull up the XBI and the IBB. And I guess my point was like, this is today's example of the market trying to broaden out from these narrow themes within technology, right? There are plenty of things that are kind of working here, right? Mm-hmm. And I just was trying to make the point though, Liz, is that like every day this week, we're going to find another thing that's going batshit crazy.
Oh.
And so, well, we can say that here.
Oh,
it's
sorry.
Our show, right? The FCC doesn't care what we say here.
So
thoughts here, Liz, when you look at that. Now, obviously the XBI versus the IBB, and I think Guy, you made this one is more even weighted and the other is more affected. And there was a stock in the one that was not even weighted that was up 30% or something like that, or off 100% or something.
Yes.
Like that, driving a lot of performance. Thoughts on biotech? I know you've been constructive on healthcare. I know biotech gets a little granular because these are companies, a lot of them are, you know, waiting for things to happen in their pipeline. But, you know, as you get questions from investors who are looking to diversify away from those 5 or 10 names on one theme, is this a sector that you feel comfortable that people can continue to dip their toe in?
What's interesting about biotech, particularly the fact that if you look at, I'm going to bring it up, the small cap index, healthcare is the biggest sector in that index. Okay. So when you talk about biotech, a lot of times we talk about the names that we hear about every day, the big companies that we know are making news about weight loss and all their wonder drugs. But the reality is that the majority of the activity, the majority of the innovation happens in small cap biotech, small cap pharma. That's where it starts. So If you look at the small cap index, just the core index, you've got almost 17% in healthcare. And then if you drill down into that, biotech is more than half of that piece. So the interesting part about biotech right now, it is obviously a very growthy part of any index, right? It's extremely growthy in the small cap space. And despite the fact that rates have stayed high and we're pushing cuts back, small cap biotech seems to still be on a tear, which tells me maybe more about risk appetite than it does about other things.
That's the most important point, in my opinion, Guy, because that's kind of what I was alluding to.
Do you have a podcast that's by that same name?
Risk appetite?
No.
The important part.
Yeah.
Podcast there.
Full circle.
But Guy, my point was that, you know, that rates used to be a thing that was a headwind, or higher rates, right? And then I also made the point about like these broken SPACs, like everything. It just feels like we're in a very low quality period of the rally, Guy.
I understand why you said that, and you made that point last night, and I agree with that. My pushback was last night will be today. It's like, in terms of what's going on with big cap pharma, they need to buy growth. There's no real organic ex Lilly, ex Novo, which we know what's going on there. There's not really a lot of organic growth there. So a lot of these companies are finding themselves in a position where they have to buy growth. Historically, big cap pharma will buy growth once these smaller companies basically acquit themselves. In other words, get through phase three, and then they go ahead and then they buy things that are a proven entity. Of course, by doing that, they're paying 15, 20 times a lot of the times, more than it would have paid if they took a flyer on these companies in early stage, understanding that there's more risks associated with it. So I think what we're seeing now is, and last night was a great example, company in phase one that got good phase one data. Mm-hmm. I mean, that stock rallied 100%, and we had that conversation last night. So I think what we're seeing now is big cap pharma saying, you know what, the old playbook is wrong. That whole Vince Lombardi, 3 yards of a cloud of dust is wrong. We're going to start being more aggressive on the risk curve, to your earlier point with Elizabeth. So clearly, they are taking risk in this space, but that's why I think, in my opinion, you can see continued strength in IBB and XBI today, notwithstanding.
Hold on. Vince Lombardi is never wrong. You got a fan in the room?
Well, stop for 1 second. 100%. Now, what you may or may not know, Elizabeth, is Vince Lombardi started his journey at Fordham University. He was one of the seven blocks of granite. As a matter of fact, if you were to go to Rose Hill, you'd see Lombardi's name splashed all over the place. Uh-huh. He subsequently went to coach with the New York Giants. He was a coordinator along with Tom Landry. Think about that coaching staff, Dan. Let him go. Yeah. He went to Green Bay. And of course, Tom Landry went to the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah. The Giants left with shiny pants, as they say. What was your question?
Fan franchises. Were your parents at Fordham when he was there, when he was a coach, or no? I'm just trying to
think. Oh, when he was a coach. Yeah. I thought you were saying when he was an undergrad. My parents were old enough that
one. When he was a coach at Fordham.
He wasn't a coach. He was a player at Fordham.
Oh, got it.
Seven blocks of granite. He was an offensive lineman.
All right.
Anyway, I don't know how we got on. Green Bay, Vince Lombardi, Cloud of Dust. Yep.
Well, and you said something, I think something along the lines of that the
playbook is gone.
The way that it's done. So here's another thing. And this is something that I think about pretty often. I think it is about risk appetite. I'm going to split hairs a little bit. Dan, you said it's, I don't remember what you call it, low quality or a crap rally or something like that.
Yeah.
I think it's a speculative rally in the sense that now, okay, maybe the AI theme, at least for today, is sort of played up as high as it's going to get. So now people want that next thing, right? Yeah. So we've got obviously the weight loss stuff that went through all of large cap healthcare. Looking at the next best thing, what will that be? Maybe it's small cap biotech. Maybe somebody's going to come up with that thing and people are trying to glom on to the next theme. There's really no concrete evidence of that happening, of that being the case. But now it's this speculative enthusiasm. And I'm not even saying that that's misplaced. I think that there are a lot of reasons to be excited about the market today and its resilience, but it is still very speculative, especially because if the argument is that we are more mid-cycle or early cycle than late cycle, small cap value is what should be outperforming. So the fact that people are still grasping for growth tells me that they've run out of opportunities in the large cap.
See, it's more to me, it's actually not about fundamentals. It's about sentiment. It's about FOMO. And so, you know, without those names doing like the 100% gain, you know, having a disproportionate effect on that, was it the IBB? I think, you know, whatever, we're not talking about them then. You know what I mean? There's just another sector that's actually at all time highs. You know why? And let's throw up the S&P chart. It's because the S&P is at all time highs. Right. And so we're having broader participation. And I think that's probably a healthy thing. The S&P is probably what, 12% above its 200-day moving average. I think it was our friend Peter Buchvar who made this point a couple weeks ago in the book report, saying that, you know, last few times that has happened, we've had a bit of correction. If they could pull up the S&P chart really quickly, and then that leads me to, again, sentiment. I think is important. You know, you want to talk about, I think this is a little bit of a preview, Liz, of your note that comes out tomorrow on the SoFi Investing blog. That would be SoFi.com/blog.
Slash badass.
Do you know what blog is?
slash. No, I know, but I look at this.
Don't go to bet slash badass.
My kids are now older, but when they were younger, we watched the Hannah Montana. You might have. Yeah.
You know that
I was
no,
a little.
You know that no matter how old they get, they're always going to be your kids.
No, that I understand, okay. But they might not watch Hannah Montana anymore.
Right.
But she's actually a very talented vocalist.
Very.
And one of her songs that I actually have on my Spotify playlist, believe it or not.
Party in the USA.
No, I do have that.
I know you.
But The Climb is one of them. Great song.
That is a great song.
And if I'm looking at this chart, it's The Climb.
And it's Party in the USA.
Well, both of those things.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I'm more shocked about, Party in the USA or The Climb.
Or The Climb. Well, there you go. You never know. But this is, I mean, this is The Climb, baby. Yeah. I mean, it is The Climb in terms of the S&P 500. And it's just a matter of time. It's interesting. I've never summited Everest. No. I've read a lot of books about it. Yeah. I know people that have done it. And what they'll tell you is, as difficult as the climb is, the dangerous part is the way back down.
Yeah.
Because everybody thinks once they've gotten to the top, it ain't over. You got it. And that's the way I look at this. I mean, we are summiting Everest here. Yeah.
Have you read still got about this season, this past season on Everest?
No, I have not.
It was a really bad one. I think they had a lot of deaths.
Well,
it's become so popular. It's become really unsafe because of the amount of people that are
too many people.
And too many rushing to do it at the wrong time. And everything
people that shouldn't be doing it. People that think, you know, it's a vanity thing and they hire the Sherpas. The most famous Sherpa of all time, of course, being Tenzing Norgay, who helped Sir Edmund Hillary up Everest. Elizabeth knows this as well. Amanda's like, please stop. It is The Climb. So you look at this chart and we are now, again, 12-13% from the moving average. Things are mean reverting, especially not necessarily the individual stocks as much as indices historically are. So Elizabeth, you see this. I know where you stand, but the technicals are still in good shape. But you're going to talk about a couple things that are concerning you. But let's look at the S&P chart first.
Yeah. So my note this week is titled "The Highs Keep Coming." The play on the hits keep coming, but the highs keep coming. Obviously, we know the broad indexes have almost all of them have reached new all-time highs, with the exception of the Russell 2000. And then the other thing that's been interesting is we haven't even finished February yet, and we've got half of the year-end price targets, year-end strategist price targets that have already been blown out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're starting to see companies raise their price target. I think Barclays was the most recent. They did it yesterday. So you're going to have to see them start raising their price targets. We're at, 50, 60, something like that, 5,060. The highest price target as of right now is only 5,400. That's 6.5% above where we are now. So again, we've got a lot of price targets that are underwater. I would expect them to keep going up and just maybe drive this momentum even further. The other thing that's interesting to look at is this chart right here. I'm so glad I brought it.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about strategist price targets all the time. Those are the top down price targets on just a broad index. If you take the bottom up price targets, so these are price targets on every individual stock aggregated for the S&P, which I would consider probably more accurate. You've got analysts who know the intricacies of those companies, and then you make a weighted average. What it would suggest for the S&P as a whole then is what's in this chart. So you've got the S&P price and that solid line on the bottom. The dotted line on the top is the aggregated price target. That price target is about 9.1% above where we are now, which sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if bottom-up analysts are right, maybe the strategists are wrong, then we've got 9.1% upside over the next 12 months. That sounds okay. The issue with that is you can see how narrow the spread is right now versus history. So usually those price targets are further away, further above where the actual index is trading. So if you want to do real math on it, the standard deviations and everything, this is actually a historically narrow spread between the two, still suggesting less upside than usual for these analysts. So naturally then, after we've had these big runs, although things seem to be going pretty well, the questions are, but did it go too far, too fast? Mm-hmm. Are we too high? Is it time to give it back?
I look at this, and I mean, this speaks to something that Danny Moses talks about all the time. Carter talks about this as well. The fact that obviously, you know, you don't get paid to be bearish in the world. And you look at this, and if we were to extend this out many years, my sense is obviously the projections for the year are always going to be significantly inflated as to really what the reality of the situation is. And I think we're seeing it here. But your point about the narrowness, I think that's really fascinating, because effectively what you're saying is even the most ardent bulls are not all that enthusiastic about where things could potentially go vis-a-vis where we are now. And then the next chart speaks to some of the things that we actually talked about, I believe, on Monday. But obviously, you're bringing it forth in a way that you can see it. Now, we had a conversation before today's show. I actually thought we were at all-time highs. We're not. As you pointed out, we made an all-time high in this ratio a few years back. But talk to why this is important and what concerns you about this chart.
Yep. So for those that are not familiar with the Buffett indicator, this is obviously Warren Buffett's indicator. It takes the Wilshire 5000, so the most comprehensive representation of the stock market, and compares it to the U.S. nominal GDP level. And it's a ratio that he likes to look at to say, are we overvalued or undervalued, rather than just looking at PE and things that we talk about more often. So you can see it's not at all-time highs, but it's at 1.91, which is the highest it's ever been, except for late 2021, when we retired transitory and the market had run and then it fell off a cliff. But here's the interesting part, and this is what I wrote in the note. The interesting part to me is that we are now at a high, right? A high level in this indicator. And that's after we've completed a hiking cycle, rates are still at this level, and we haven't tried to normalize policy yet. Yet we have all of this exuberance, all of this risk-taking behavior, and all of the appetite. So you could take that one of two ways. And honestly, I'm not sure which one is right. Mm-hmm. Is it just that the market is resilient today? Investors are more confident. Investors are more resilient. So the buying is an okay thing because it's not at an all-time high. Is it that the economy is actually getting stronger, so buying is still okay? Or you could take it as we are very clearly overvalued, which if you're talking to Warren Buffett, which I've never been able to, it'd be great if I had the opportunity. But if you're talking to him, he would say, it's clear to me that this is overvalued. And then you look at how much cash he's holding and it all sort of makes sense.
I'm glad you said that, because as it came out over the weekend, he's holding, I think, $168 billion in cash. So obviously, you know, you tell your kids save for a rainy day. That's obviously what they're doing. Now, whether or not it rains, yet to be seen. But you look at this, and this reconciles itself one of two ways. Either GDP catches up in a major way, and I think U.S. GDP now is about $27 trillion. So in order to get this back to realistic levels, GDP has to grow to approximately, I don't know, $40 trillion or so, which is, I'm just telling you flat out, it's not going to happen. Or the market cap of these stocks is going to come down in a precipitous way. That's, I think, the more likely of the two, Dan.
Yeah. And again, you know, like a year ago at this time, we didn't know what was going to happen in the next few weeks. We're going to have a banking crisis. I think a lot of the investment community, a lot of economists, a lot of businesses were very pessimistic about the economy for 2023. The fact that we had the banking crisis and then didn't have the recession that everyone thought is pretty astounding. I think we'll all look back, if we're still in the business in 10 years from now, and be like, we'll still be confounded by 2023, the sort of consensus thinking. I just flash forward to the consensus thinking now that it's just a foregone conclusion that we're having a soft landing. And, you know, we highlighted this yesterday, Guy, on Fast Money. Let's just throw up this slide with Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan, and then David Solomon.
You called him something on the show.
DJ D. Saul. I think he's de-emphasizing that nickname because he's a DJ. And I like this guy. I got to tell you, I think
we've met him.
We interviewed him for CME Group. Remember that with Terry Duffy?
Of course.
And I
was sitting right there.
You and I have met a lot of CEO types in our day. And I thought talking to him, and I think we had like a 45-minute conversation on stage with him, he did not remind me of many of the CEOs that we met over time of banks. You know, he had a really broad range. He almost felt like a tech CEO in a way. So I liked him. But the point here is about these comments. It always feels great before it's not. Mm. And, you know, David Solomon basically basically, and read the Bloomberg article. We'll put it in the show notes here. I'm talking about the consensus thinking about a soft landing. So I just think that is interesting to think about at this time, right? It's been a confounding period. We're seeing a lot of FOMO. That was my point, Liz, mm-hmm. about the sort of late stage behavior that I see in the markets. Mm-hmm. Let's flash forward a little bit here to some of the sectors. And Amanda's put them together on a nice little screen that we have on the fact set here. You can see which sectors they are. You can see the year-to-date performance. You can see how they're kind of trading today. Right now, we do have, you know, the healthcare and communication services kind of weighing on the broader market. But one of the points I'll just make is, like, let's just double click on the XLI for a second.
Why not?
Okay. Like, this is industrials. Okay. Looks great. I mean, it doesn't look too different than that S&P chart, right? Mm-hmm. That we had up there. They're on a 45 degree angle. They mm-hmm. just are holding the uptrends like a boss here. And we're in a low vol environment with a VIX at 13 and a half or whatever. Everything feels great. People love mm-hmm. breakouts. Like when they look at charts of this. The problem is, and Guy, you make this point all the time, is the space in between the moving average,
right?
And where, so it's getting a little extended here, people. So the likelihood of a correction is probably coming pretty soon. I just want to also pull up really quickly the XLF. Maybe we'll get Liz's take here.
Well, let me talk about industrials for a second real quick. So
whatever you want.
Here's the thing. If the pervasive thought became, we are going to pull off a soft landing, the economy can mm-hmm. keep expanding, onshoring continues, yep. manufacturing PMI has bottomed, that because that did become the pervasive thought. Yep. If that's true, then industrials should be doing well. And that would actually suggest that industrials have further upside. And I would say there's probably a handful of companies in there that do, and that still will do fine. The risk is the companies that cannot manage their operating margins through a tough environment, a normalizing yield curve, a normalizing monetary policy environment, lower liquidity. But there are probably some great industrial companies out there that are, and I don't know why I say this, because it's well-oiled machines, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to get rid of that. I don't know how to get rid of the pun.
No.
Anyway, there are probably some great companies out there that you can still buy in this sector because they've managed their operating margins very, very well.
Yeah, and that goes, Guy, like energy also. Energy, industrials, mm-hmm. these will all be great. I think you would probably, I know that you've been bullish on energy, but you could probably get pretty bullish on industrials for all of those themes if the market acts in a different way and then what the consensus is. And it doesn't have to act like that for long. You just have to take some of the froth out.
No, listen, without question. And you see the XLI. So let's drill down for a second, if we may. I mean, this is not equal weight necessarily, but, you know, 4.5%, I think, is the biggest weight. General Electric is, I think, the largest weight now. I mean, the recent run in GE has been staggering. Again, this is not your grandfather or grandmother's GE. But the two that I want to look at, pull up a Caterpillar chart and look at the move in this stock over the last, you know, 3 or 4 months. Caterpillar shouldn't move like this. I mean, this has been somewhat parabolic in terms of its move. I mean, this is one of stodgy America, Rust Belt stuff, and this stock is moving like a technology stock. I have no idea why Uber's in this, but it is. I think it's 4.2%. Look at the move in Uber over the last few mm-hmm. months as well. So, you know, you're seeing the XLI, and it's telling you a story you think about the economy, but I'm not necessarily convinced that's what's going on. With that said, by the way, today is Wednesday, as I mentioned. So put your questions in the chat.
Oh, look at that.
Or email them. Do whatever you want, because this is question day. Anyway, please continue.
We're going to hit them really soon. Doug Cass over there at realmoney.com, Seabreeze Partners, and often gives us a lot of great ideas and commentary as we do the market call here. He just pings us, and I think this is important, Liz, and this is something that Doug has been on for a little bit, and we've been talking about it here. He said, minding Mr. Market, as the price of equities decouple with interest rates, mm-hmm. which we just talked about a little bit, I grow more bearish on equities as the S&P index climbs and upside rewards diminish against downside risks. And so talked about that. Let's just talk about the yield thing, because again, we've seen a lot of sectors. We talked about financials for a second. They didn't like in the fall interest rates when the 10-year went from 4% to 5%. They did not like it. And maybe we can pull up an XLF chart. They benefited when we saw it go from 5% to 3.8%, the 10-year. And here we are now at 4.3%. And again, they don't mind. So they don't mind at this point with yields, right? Like, well, mm-hmm. pull up JP Morgan for a second, okay? When yields, you know, up, down, indifferent. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So talk mm-hmm. to us about that yield and the decoupling. Yep. From rates.
Well, so actually, if I had known we were going to do that, I would have told somebody to put my tweet up from earlier today.
Oh,
so
we could do that. We could do that.
I'll talk really slowly while we grab it. It's a chart titled Stock Valuations and Real Rates. And I've used this chart before, but it shows you basically that the relationship between S&P forward PEs and the 10-year treasury yield. You have to invert the yield, but the relationship is usually pretty tight until now, mm-hmm. and it's diverged. Now, again, this is another one of those relationships that there's one of two ways that it can come back together. Either stock valuations come down, maybe yields go down. We're still not sure which is going to be the case, but you can tell just by looking at it that this is a strange period and that there needs to be some sort of reversion to the mean just in this relationship. And again, it's not to suggest that stocks have to fall. It feels like that might need to be the case at some point, but this can persist. This has already persisted for much longer than I thought it would. I'd have to go back and look, but Mario and I have been posting this chart, using it in pieces for a long time, mm-hmm. and have been using it as a warning signal that continues to just stay a warning signal and nothing has come of it yet.
I want to say something. Amazing job by our crack staff, Amanda, yes, getting that up as quickly. I mean, that's tremendous.
Look at this, though. There's a little video playing.
That must be like the, really the Twitter application. I'm not sure what that is.
Let's hit a couple single stock names.
Tremendous job.
Before we get to the Q&A, keep putting them in there for Amanda. Guy, this is not a small company that's dropped about 10% in the last kind of few weeks or so. And it's UNH. Mm-hmm. It used to be a $500 billion market cap. Now it's $450 billion. You can see the move just in the last actually week or so. Antitrust probe, there was a hack. There was a few other things going on here. What do you make of a company like this having these sorts of problems right now? The stock market, I mean, investors are kind of shooting first, asking questions later. And that's not something I would expect in this sort of risk environment that we've just been talking about.
UNH has been sort of, they've been isolated. And I guess in a lot of ways, sort of, they've been left out of the problems that Humana and some of these, mm-hmm. like, for example, that's put up a longer term UNH chart real quick. That's the one with the headline. But if you put up a longer, you'll see. I mean, this stock has been lower left, upper right until recently. Now, just visually remember that. Now put up like a Humana, for example, which lives in the same world. And you can see some of the devastation that this stock has incurred over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. So it's a much different story. I mention that because at a certain point, they're all going to face the same obstacles. Now, what we've seen with UNH for the first time in a long time is, you know, this is a stock that's, again, lower left, upper right. It has a series of pullbacks along the way, but each one has been an opportunity. Something's changed over the last 9 months or so where this stock has had some difficulties, been going sideways. And now technically, it appears as though we're sort of breaking down a little bit. So you want to watch this carefully. Why UNH specifically? Because the Dow, which is a price-weighted index, whatever, UNH is the biggest component of it. So keep this on your radar screen.
Yeah, well, the other point is you could say it's diverged from the performance of Humana, but like it's at the same spot it was 2 years ago, which is an absolute train wreck if you think about relative to the S&P 500, which is up, you know, near 5,100. And I think 2 years ago or so, the S&P was, you know, 4,400, 4,500 or so. So like on a relative basis, it's act very poorly. Liz, when you start seeing, you know, one of the largest market cap companies in the world acting that way. You know, we just talked about in the healthcare space, obviously there's Lilly, there's Novo. Those are all bigger market cap companies, but that's all within the last year. UNH a year ago was bigger than the two of them. So, you know, again, it's important to kind of keep an eye on the things that aren't participating. We've highlighted Apple on many occasions, which is down 6.5% on the year, really diverged from some of the names that are benefiting from this AI trend.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's an added layer here. First of all, here's what I would say is if we're just talking about it straightforward like that, then this would fly in the face of there's a broadening in the market. So if the idea is that the market is broadening out and its other sectors are starting to carry their weight, this is one of those stocks that you want to participate. And if it's not, you know, the broadening argument gets weaker. Mm-hmm. But the added layer here, which I think is probably obvious, more obvious later in the year, is that we've got an election coming up and healthcare is one of those sectors that tends to trade pretty volatile around election time. This is early, so I don't think that's what's going on here. But come June, come summer, you're going to see healthcare stocks probably take it on the chin and then maybe have rallies depending on how polling is going. And that goes for a handful of other sectors too, defense names, right? Things like that.
Yeah.
So that's just something that we have to keep in mind when we look at price action.
It's funny, you know, we obviously, aside from Liz, and we get Liz twice a week on with us, Guy, but we also
How fortunate are we?
Very fortunate. That was where I was going. But we also are fortunate that we'll have a whole host of different market strategists from different shops who have different constituencies and the like. And, you know, we keep asking them, like, when will geopolitics matter? When will politics here matter? It doesn't, no one, everyone's like, that's like a fall thing. Like, you know what I mean? That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe it is. I'm just saying it's just kind of interesting in a way. All right, last thing before we get to the Q&A. So keep them coming here, people. Tonight after the close, a big tech name reporting.
That would be Salesforce.com.
Comes out CRM. You read the rundown. I saw what you did here. All right, look at what Amanda did right there. So we talk about implied movement in the options market. How are we doing that here? Well, we take the at the money straddle in the weeklies. That would be the at the money call and the at the money put. The stock is trading at $300. They make it really easy for us today here, people. If you take the call and the put, they're each about $12. You put it together. If you were just to buy the implied movement into the print by Friday's close, you would need either a move to $324 to break even to the upside, or you'd need a move to $276 on the downside. That is what that those two boxes are kind of illustrating. Let's look at that on a one-year basis here, guys. So 4% in either direction, and you can see what's going on there. I mean, not huge, you know, either way. It would be a big chunk to the downside on the year-to-date stuff, but this one is also getting way above that moving average, way above that breakout level here. We know what the expectations are, that they're going to talk to us about generative AI and how that's kind of working amongst a lot of their products and services and the like here, and they're becoming more productive, and it's going to be more profitable, yada, yada, yada. Thoughts here, guy, because at this stage of the game, after everything that we've known, how could a company like this that's acted this well have a meaningful gap to the upside on a beat and raise? In my opinion,
all great points. So the stock has had a great run recently. It probably trades little north of 30 times earnings, next year's earnings-ish. Probably, you know this better than I, but it's probably 9 times revenue-ish, which isn't ridiculous, but just for perspective. But this is the important part. Go back at longer term chart and look at where we were, look at where we traded down to, and look at where we are now. You will see that magically, like many stocks, we're approaching the levels we last saw in the fall, specifically in November of 2021. So I think what you could potentially see here, and this is just me, a spike post earnings like we've seen with many companies, the euphoria around whatever they say, and tomorrow's action, I should say.
Yeah.
You might put in a pretty significant top, especially if you couple that with what I think is going to be pretty large trading volume. So if I were to play this, I'm putting it out there. I think you wait for earnings, you see where it trades up to, and I think there's a chance you get up to 305, 310, and then you're looking to pull the ripcord and try to play it on a bearish tilt.
Yeah, be really clear here. I had a typo here. It's my mistake. It's an 8% implied move. Just take the $24, the premium of the put and the call. That is the implied move divided by the ticker, or the stock price and the strike. And 24 divided by 300 gets you 8% either direction. Last quarter, and if you just want to go back to that one-year chart, last quarter, the stock had a 9% gap to a new 52-week high. And so the point is, just think about where the stock was back then. Look at that uptrend that's been in place. I think what Amanda did right there with the buy ratings and the price targets and all that sort of stuff. So we're at the 12-month price target of all those companies that rate this stock, or all those banks, 47 ratings. You see what percentage of them are buy. It seems like everyone's on one side of that trade. So I like the way you're thinking about it, guy, from a technical standpoint. Maybe get back up to that prior high, but that's probably a good place to kind of let some go here a little bit.
I agree. There's something on your radar screen quickly that you sort of like the technical setup. It comes in the form of Charles Schwab, if you want to pull up Charles Schwab, because we're not always Debbie. I don't even know what that means, Debbie. It must have some, must be derived from something. My sense is not Shakespeare, because Debbie wasn't a popular name in that era.
Deborah.
So it must be something like the early 1900s.
Yeah, well, it's interesting.
I'm going to look it up while you talk about Schwab.
If we look at the one-year chart of the Schwab and how hard hit it got last year during the regional banking crisis, and then it was really in the penalty box for a bit because of that kind of held to maturity, sort of mark-to-market exposure that a lot of investors thought they had. So it's been a very volatile stock over the last year or so, but it's starting to feel a bit more constructive. That last quarter they put up looked pretty good. They're doing a pretty good job integrating TD Ameritrade. I just think from a purely technical standpoint, I mean, that thing looks like it's ready to what, guy?
Party.
Yeah, a little bit there. And again, if the narrative starts to shift a little bit, what?
Hey, you guys.
I don't know. I just think from, you know, people ask us all the time how we start sometimes with a trade idea. And sometimes it could be as simple as a technical setup.
You're looking at charts, and then you do a little more work.
Relative valuation, and you're looking at a whole host of other things. So thoughts there, not specifically, Liz, on the name, but maybe how you think about coming into an idea sometimes.
Well, I mean, similarly, you look at first, you look at the numbers, because the numbers are what bring something up onto your radar. And then you have to ask yourself, if it's down, is it down for a reason? Did I miss something? Did I miss a headline? And if you didn't miss a headline, then you look deeper into the company. What's going on? What's going on with margins? What's going on with revenues? How have earnings momentum been over the last few quarters? And if you can't find anything that's really wrong, then it's usually an opportunity. We talked about it. I don't remember if it was Monday or if it was last week. What kind of correction makes something more attractive? Mm-hmm. And correction, by definition, being 10%, I start thinking that it's more attractive when it's at least 7 or 8%. I'd like to see it at 10. And then you dip in if you can't find anything else wrong with it. But 7 to 8%, it starts to look interesting. 10%, you're probably taking a position.
According to the Wikipedia, apparently, though, there are better companies now. This Perplexity is much better. But Debbie Downer apparently is attributed to Saturday Night Live, a woman named Rachel Dratch. Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
But I think
what year was that?
2004.
Yeah.
Debbie Downer started in 2004.
But I think it's got to be long.
Will Ferrell used to be on that cast.
Wow. It's that time.
Yeah. Q&A. It's Wednesday.
Yes. If it's Wednesday,
it's Q&A.
You know, I used to work at Carvel.
Did you?
I did.
How old were you?
I was probably, want to say, 16-ish.
Every Wednesday is Sunday.
Wednesday is Sunday at Carvel. Yeah.
Did they make ice cream cakes?
I was the one that made the cakes.
You made ice cream cakes?
Yeah, I did. 100%.
You love those little
chocolate. They put me in the back. There used to be a thing called the shock box. Yeah. And that would get shit really cold. Like, you know, you didn't want to be in the shock box. Okay. But that's where you put the cake, whatever the flavor was.
Yeah.
You put it in your cake holder, like Mr. The what's the thing? Frosty the Whale or something the Whale.
Okay. Yeah.
Then you put it in a shock box, you froze that shit, and then you took it out, and then we're able to sort of put the icing and stuff
fudgy
on it.
Oh, right.
Fudgy.
Okay. Wow.
People love those little chocolate
the things
crunch
we didn't know about.
You know what they are? They're stale flying saucers.
I love broken up. We had Dairy Queen cake. I don't know if it was the same, but there was a crunchy cookie.
Maiden of milk.
Part.
First question is from Jack. I'm going to screw your name up, Jack. I apologize. No, gun car. Maybe I got that right. Now, here's the question. And I have an answer to this, by the way. Bank of America's Savita's view. The one bear case that I want to debunk is the idea that the market is too expensive. I don't think that makes sense because the market today is such a different animal. That was Savita. Okay. Now, interesting enough, this is a Bank of America tweet. The S&P is statistically expensive on 19 of 20 metrics and is trading at a 95th percentile price, trailing earnings ratio based on data back to 1900 from Bank of America. I'm going to send that to, we'll put that in the show notes. So on the one hand, you have Savita saying the market is not that expensive. On the flip side, you have a Bank of America tweet talking about how the market is expensive on 19 of 20 different metrics dating back to 1900. Which makes perfect sense about this market. You have people on one side of the fence and people on the other, and they're going back and forth.
Well,
Dan,
well, maybe Liz can help us with this too, because before you were at SoFi, you were at a much more traditional bank, which was Bank of New York. You dealt with a lot of different sorts of clients, you know, advisors, right? Mm-hmm. But you're also dealing with a lot of institutional folk and the like. And, you know, a lot of things, listen, I feel bad for a lot of these different strategists at these big different shops, because a lot of them have different titles. They're working. Some are within, you know, investment management. Some are in institutional, you know, research and strategy and all that. Like, and so there are competing headlines coming out of the same bank. Help us think about that a little bit, because, and then we can talk about whether valuation is a good timing tool and the like.
Yeah. Well, so Savita was on Squawk Box this morning. I caught part of the segment. I wonder if maybe that's where this quote is from, but I don't remember this particular part. I must have missed it. There's a lot of different things she could be saying. I'm guessing that if she's thinking about it, what I've heard her say before is that productivity has been so much better than it was before, and that the expectation for productivity gains continuing make things actually less expensive when you're looking at it through that lens, because you're buying the future productivity, you're buying the future growth. And a lot of things, when you look in different sectors, it does change. if you've got a company that's a best-in-class company, you're just going to pay more for it. If you've got a company that's generating a lot of growth, which right now that seems to be all investors want, it's all they care about, then you're going to pay more for it. So I think right now, from a relative perspective, depending on what the future potential is, maybe there are sectors, maybe there are pockets of the market that she doesn't think are overvalued. I think if we're looking at it broadly, it does feel overvalued. The other thing I would say is these big banks, Dan, you mentioned this, they have such different client bases. You could be talking to a financial advisor in Wichita, Kansas one day, and you could be talking to a foundation that runs hundreds of millions of dollars the next day. Obviously, their investment policy statements are going to be completely different. So she might even be talking about some investors that are looking for private credit, private equity, things that we don't even value on a daily basis or that are pretty much impossible to value in the public market.
Wichita, Kansas, by the way, Dan, is a great little town.
Never been.
It's going to be the Austin, Texas. It's going to be what Austin, really? It's what Austin was 10 or 15 years ago. That's what it's turned into. By the way, a lot of people don't know this.
I doubt that.
In Wichita, Kansas, you have some extraordinary wealth there. You have the Cargill family has had, you have the Koch brothers hanging around.
Pulling the plug on Nikki Haley.
I saw that. Yeah. And then, of course, you have Spirit Aerosystems, which has obviously been in news for all the wrong reasons. They're the largest employer in the state of Kansas, little known fact. Yeah. Here's a good question, by the way. They're all good questions. From JS. This I like the way he sets this up. Formerly a laughingstock, Japan's Nikkei has actually acted well and runs at a more reasonable PE than the S&P. Thoughts on FX Hedge DXJ ETF at this level? I think that's a wisdom tree ETF hedged with the yen. So you get a little giddy up here. Put up this chart because you'll see exactly what I mean. I think the biggest holding is Toyota, Mitsubishi. I think Japan Tobacco's in this as well. It's been extraordinary. And if I guess my answer to your question is, if you think you're going to see continued weakness in the yen, in other words, the dollar continues to strengthen against the yen from 149 and change north of 155, this is the place you want to be. The ambassador, Tim Seymour, is probably more prone to go to the EWJ, which is approaching the all-time high, Dan, that made, I want to say, in the fall of 2020.
Yeah, if these guys can pull up the Nikkei for a second here, and again, the DXJ hedged, I get it. I'm not smart enough to play these sorts of indices and thinking about it that way. But I got to tell you, you and I were on the desk of Fast Money the other night. We were talking about Japan. When I think of this company, the fact that people are saying, or this country, that it's back to like 40-year high levels, as long as I've been in the business, all I've heard about Japan and their economy and the way that they've managed their monetary policy and the changing demographics they have again and again and again. It sounds like a disaster. It seems like you're literally buying back in. Now pull it out 40 years. You're buying back in for the death rattle here. Oh. This guy, what are you going to see right here when we pull up this chart going all the way back to the 80s? You are going to see the mother, I'm just going to keep saying the mother until it comes up.
Well, I know
the
mother
of all double tops. Yeah, okay.
It's good. The so, little hourglass yeah, thing is
so not buying hedge Japan here, not buying anything. And the other point is like the demographics of some of these developed nations, including the U.S., are really bad. And that's going to be really bad for GDP in a lot of these countries.
The demographics of Japan, a lot of people say it's unrecoverable in terms of what's going on. And by the way, if the U.S. doesn't get their shit together, we're probably on a similar trajectory at some point. But your point is well taken. We're looking at something now that's potentially, and the longer the duration of these tops, the more powerful, I guess, the pattern. So we're giving it a shot here. We're obviously impaling ourselves, but I get your drift.
You can pull up. I have it on my Twitter account actually, back on February 22nd. If you really want to see a chart, and it does look like a double top. And I tweeted that day the Nikkei is above 39,000 and set a new all time high for the first time since 1989. That's 34 years. Incredible. People misinterpreted that as if I was impressed. Okay. Incredible, meaning it took 34 years to get back to that level. So we've got a 3.5.
Look at that. That's
the chart.
What I was going for.
We've got a 3.5 decade of nothing, right? Nothing happened. And
what was the low? I just want to go back. What were those lows right there? I can't see it. Well, maybe I'll put my glasses on for a second here.
Let's see. In late 2009-ish? Yeah. Okay. Probably.
So that was the GFC. Okay. 7,000. So if you're telling me that over the last 15 years, this thing has gotten back to, you know, where it topped out, you know what I mean, in the late 80s or something like that. And now you're buying into this because you think that there's like another leg to this. I think you're doing it wrong. That's just my two cents.
I like that.
Yeah.
Situation Room. By the way, what's that show
seems
on
like a show on like CNN or something like
situation
that.
Situation. No, there is a situation. Okay, room. Maybe. But there was that Jersey Shore, one of the people. Like, I don't think that was like his baptismal name. Like he didn't come out and said he's. No, it's not the situation.
I don't know that a church would have allowed it.
Might be like, excellent point by you, because it has all kinds of connotations. Like the situation, like maybe it was an odd situation. That cat, but I don't like. You know who I liked? Not that anybody cares. I like the JWoww person, but the short one. What was her name?
Snooki.
She married the guy from East Hanover, New Jersey, and she actually has the Snooki shop. You don't care about any of this.
You know,
in Madison, New Jersey. Anyway,
you know, I've never watched a single,
nor have I.
Single minute of any reality TV show.
Well,
not one.
What's
not
the NBC Fast Money? I mean, that's reality. And when EY's with the SDs on the HT, I mean, that's reality. I mean, that is reality TV.
Oh, man.
Situation room. Question. This is good because we sort of addressed it in terms of the chart. What do you make of the speculation that Warren Buffett's unnamed position is Schwab? That's not that crazy if you think about what his positions were in Japan. I mean, he was buying these sort of, I don't want to say fintech, but exchange type, trading house type things. So Schwab actually might make a little sense. I have no idea. The old man doesn't, I'm not privy to anything he does, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. Here's one for you. This is from PTOR, P-T-O-R. Apple has had multiple lows between 180 and 181 and a half over the past 2 months. If it breaks down, that's about 3.5 months of buying overhang, 9% from the December high down. We are long Microsoft, short Apple. Will you target 166 below an Apple? That's a level that I've talked about for a while. I'll say this. If we pull up an Apple chart, I don't know if you can put some moving averages on this biatch, but what you'll see is in October, we traded right down to the 200-day and bounced. That last move down was to the 200-day and bounced. I think that's 150. Now we're through it, and we're not bouncing. We had that little bounce yesterday. It ain't holding. So I think it's actually reasonable to think you could see sort of a 165 to 170 handle on this thing in the near future. And that short Apple long Microsoft trade has been working, Dan.
All right. You and I have a little bit of a problem here.
Why?
Maybe Liz, we're going to need a swear jar, I think, because I just screwed up on, well, CMA, on Fast Money last night.
What did I say? I said biatch.
Well, I know, but like if you say that, we're going to have some problems on Fast Money.
I don't
if
say biatch on TV.
Follow up my batshit with a biatch.
I wouldn't. I'm not doing.
You and I might be in the.
By the way, I was going to read. On the back cover of Kara's books.
Yeah.
It has like endorsements.
Yeah.
And Kara's funny.
Yes.
One of them is from Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And she has next to him Twitter guy. And the quote is, "You are an asshole," which I just think is fabulous.
So let's go really
good
back.
For Kara,
let's go back to Apple.
Sorry.
Let's go back to Apple for a second here. Let's do a 1 year chart. And you can see it's holding on for dear life at 180. To Guy's point, it's below that 200-day moving average. They can draw a nice line that attaches that year ago level. I think that was about 145. You attach it to the October low, which is that 166 sort of level that you just talked about. We're almost at that trend. You can see that 200-day moving average. That is also a pretty similar sort of trend here. Here's the thing that I think will be really interesting with Apple, the relative underperformance that we've had year to date. Okay. The relative valuation to a Microsoft or something like that, it's getting no appreciation for anything related to generative AI. Okay. And we keep talking about this company, and he's got actually the CEO of the company is going to come on CNBC's
of Apple?
Money of Perplexity.
Oh.
I think, and I said this on the show a couple weeks ago, I think Apple should buy one of these, you know, chatbots, search engines. All of a sudden, they plug that into their 2 billion installed iOS base here, and they are a generative AI. If this company, Perplexity, just raised money at like basically a half, I think it was like a half $1 billion. Okay. They raised $73 million like last month or something like that. Let's just say for shits and giggles, Apple.
You just said that for me not to do it.
This is our show, Guy. I'm saying we're going to have a problem on the CNBC if you and I get too used to this, Liz. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you are.
So, Liz, I want to hear your take
on this show.
Apple does not make a lot of big acquisitions. The last big one I think they made was a Beats, which was a total disaster for $3.2 billion. Let's say they do a knockout bid, $3 billion for Perplexity. I guarantee you this would be worth $100 billion in market cap. Think about that. $3 billion acquisition. The stock would rally $100 billion easy.
What's that cat's name at Apple now?
Tim Cook.
He's watching, right? I mean, you might him and his CFO, maybe.
But I mean, like that seems like a layup to me. And anybody, I'm not even a banker. Just call me. I'll get this deal done. If you get me like $2.5 billion,
you think Apple's market cap goes up immediately?
It's a $3 trillion market cap. So do the math. I mean, because they're being left out of this whole thing. People are looking at Siri. They've been making fun of Siri for years. People also think that Apple is not good at software. Okay, you remember the whole Apple Maps thing, and then
they get the AI kicker.
My only point is, I would love to see this stock, and I said it last month on CNBC. I'd love to see the stock at 150. I'd love to see them get in the penalty box the way Google's in the penalty box right now, because then we're going to have Worldwide Developers Forum. It's going to come in early to mid June, and they will have the goods in generative AI. They will have a plan. They will have to talk about it. They have not talked about it really meaningfully in a year and a half. And I think that could be the game changer, but you'd want to buy it when it's depressed. That's
speaking of the penalty box, Rangers play. I have a question come up. Rangers play tonight.
Yeah.
Probably Columbus again. They play Columbus on Sunday at MSG. Matt Rempe is the talk of the NHL.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight. I'm just putting it out there. It is criminal that Milwaukee does not have an NHL team. It's criminal.
You know, I think that there's just not enough people there. It's even hard for Milwaukee to share.
Nashville, Tennessee, they love their Nashville Predators. I think Milwaukee would embrace a hockey team.
There's no baseball team in Nashville, Tennessee.
No, there's not.
So it's like you pick and choose.
I'd pick hockey.
Yeah. But we've got the Bucks in winter. And I think there's just not enough eyeballs for people to have all of it. Plus the Badgers. It's a big college state.
No, it is. You know what? The Midwest is more college. Yeah. Excellent point by you.
And the Badgers. Marquette. The Badgers have a hockey team.
Sure. Yes, they do.
I saw Marquette play. I saw them play Georgetown a couple weeks ago.
They kicked the shit out of
basketball.
Of course, again. All right, last one. This is from Scott A. And Scott's here all the time. Hello, Scott. This is for Elizabeth, by the way. Would you take the over or the under on the first rate cut at 50 basis points? In other words, he thinks when they come out, they're coming out, you know, Jesse James shit, guns blazing.
Yeah. I'll take the under on that.
I agree with you.
Because if they come out at 50, that's them admitting that they're trying to chase and that they waited way too long, or admitting that something went wrong and now they have to save it, and that we don't want that to happen. Nobody wants them to make their first cut 50. However, I do think that we will see some 50s in the early days if they wait longer. So let's say they don't start cutting till July. I still think the first one's 25 because they want to send that message and they want to soften the blow. But then it's very possible that September is 50, right? Something like that. Just because if the data deteriorates quickly enough, they're going to try to chase it.
Could not agree with you more. 25, I think 25, 25, then a series of 50s. And then we'll, you know, God only knows what's going on at that point. Ranger hockey tonight.
Again,
I don't know if
they're still playing. Wait, they're still playing tonight.
They're still
playing
tonight.
Okay, just check.
We used to say, I mean, we're not that bright, but you know, you like rhymes. Like people say, sell in May and go away. Why is because May sell May go away? It just rhymes.
That's right.
In tournament time, we used to say you put your bet on Marquette, Elizabeth. You like what I did? You put your bet on Marquette, and I know you got that. What's that DraftKings app or something?
It's DraftKings.
You probably have one of those. I know.
I do not have one of those. No.
But that's it for today.
I would put my bet on Marquette.
You would?
Yeah.
Of course you would.
Of course.
I mean,
we are Marquette.
By the way, I went to a wedding at the church at Mark. Beautiful.
Jesu.
So, excuse me?
The church's name is it's the Church of Jesu. I was baptized.
Jesu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesu.
Jesus.
Jesus.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's how you say it.
You were baptized there.
I was.
Elizabeth Ann.
Elizabeth Francis. Yeah.
Francis, which is a great name. Mm-hmm. You don't hear the name Francis any. You know, Frank Sinatra obviously is Francis Albert Sinatra, but you don't hear Fran or Franny or Francis much for women. I think it's a great name.
Nobody I used can. To hate it when I was little. You know, when you want your name to be real normal.
What did you want your name to be?
I don't probably Marie or Anne or something. I always liked Elizabeth, but the Francis part, I was like, oh.
I think because you can do a lot with it.
I love it now.
I mean, you know how you always say, you know, Amanda's going to get mad at us.
She's
you know what? She just texted me. She just put in the chat.
No idea.
Like, you guys do whatever you want. She's like, I'm watching Jersey Shore right now. So she's like, she's okay.
She outies.
So we can just keep going.
She gave 5,000. Yeah, no, we got it.
All right. On that note. Yeah.
Tomorrow's Thursday. Historically, Thursday is EY Day, but we got her on Wednesday now, which is a treat. And she comes here, which is wonderful.
That's amazing.
But tomorrow, Thursday, last day of February, for you people that are born on the 29th, every 4 years you have a birthday. I don't know what you do the rest of the time.
It's a fountain of youth.
Yeah.
Dumb. Butters.
Butters is back.
And Carter Braxton Worth.
CBW.
And we'll talk about, we'll look back and see what CRM did.
So let's do this. Let's front load our burn book preview. Go to the Apple Podcast
store. What did you just
leave
say?
Leave a review for the OK Computer podcast. Follow it and send a screenshot of your review to contact@riskreversal.com. And Amanda's going to send you a free book. And if we get to the 100, the first 100,
we'll
do it again. Because we love Karen.
Front
love
load. It just
front load. Let's do it.
Sounds
get all up in there. All right, people. That was fun.
We'll that was tomorrow. Fun.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Later, peeps.